And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
And it is my great pleasure to introduce to you today the beginning of the phase one portion of our programming. And by phase one, yes indeed, boys and girls, we are talking about the one and only, the Man of Steel. Oops, nope, sorry, take that back, copyright infringement, nope, wrong company. We are talking about a literal Man of Steel, or in this case, a Man of Iron, the one and only, the first Iron Man movie.
Yes. So because you skipped over a few parts, like, hi, producer Mike here, how you doing? we are embarking in a journey called the MCU, also known as the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Also known as, this is going to be very entertaining, slightly painful, more pain, some laughter, and a lot of notes.
And just keep this in mind, there's like, what, 23 films, including Spider-Man Far From Home?
Something like that.
And I have to do 900 plus episodes of Power Rangers on Power Dorks. So, which one's more painful?
Yeah, okay, you win with Power Dorks. I still can't believe you're going it episode by episode, but you do you.
Which you're appearing on an episode soon.
This is true.
Yes, but
so if you guys aren't sick of my sassy remarks, you'll have to go to Power Dorks and hear other people's sassy remarks with occasionally hearing my sassy remarks.
Hey, don't you ever mess with Kimberly and her sass girlfriend. Anyways, but if you want to know more, we'll tell you how to listen to that at the end of the show, because it's the same website as Nerdy Notions. How about that concept?
Look at that. It's almost like they have the same producer or something.
I just can't quite put a finger on it at all.
The real mystery.
But yeah, so we're going through the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're going to be going through the phases. So once phase one is done, we will do 2 to 3 episodes of something else. Do phase two, 2 to 3 episodes of something else. Phase three, which is going to be the longest one, because phase one is 6 movies. Wait, hold on. Iron Man, Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America, Avengers. So that's 6 movies for the first phase.
Yep.
7 movies for phase two.
And then all the other movies for phase three.
And then it's like 12 or 13 movies for phase three.
Because we really had to stretch out phase three. Even though, like, in terms of world... Anyway, we can talk about that when we get there.
Yes. So...
Let's listen
to Power Dorks. This is everyone's favorite thing in my mind. The abridged version of the movie.
If you want, I can start and you can jump in with your 4 pages of notes, because somebody had to be extra. All right. Well, welcome to Iron Man. Iron Man is not about a superhero. Not at all. It is about a man named Tony Stark, a billionaire playboy D-bag, who finds out that the reasons that made him rich are the same ones that now endanger his life. As terrorists kidnap him, and really not very elaborately, anybody can come up with an IED these days, they demand he make them something very powerful called a Jericho missile. Tony at first refuses, but considering him and his doctor being held prisoner, note, doctor is being held prisoner separately, and Tony's also attached to a car battery because vroom vroom. No, it's really just so the shrapnel doesn't get in.
You just really set me up for a really inappropriate joke right there. How dare you?
The doctor, of course, saved his life by attaching him to a car battery, in case those Iron Man jokes haven't started yet. And thus, he uses his time to not create a rocket for fear of his life, but instead to create a powerful mecha suit to fight his way out of the terrorist compound, which of course he does, because otherwise what would be the point of the movie? Played by Robert Downey Jr., he of course escapes, although of course everybody's favorite sidekick doctor dies, because that's how life works out for him. And so Tony Stark is rescued by Terrence Howard's Rhodey, the one and only time Terrence Howard will ever appear in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because money. And thus Tony is now stuck in a new life he's not quite sure he remembers the same way. But don't worry, he has a ragtag team of rascals to help him out. The glamorous sidekick Pepper Potts, personal assistant, who does anything and everything that Mr. Stark requires to, including occasionally, and I quote, take out the trash. In this case, the trash is before the kidnapping, and that trash is a very snarky, very annoying reporter named Christine Everhart, who works for Vanity Fair. Never let it be said that Vanity Fair is not real journalism. I did not know Vanity Fair does stories about terrorism, but okay! I thought it was just fashion, but what do I know? And Tony Stark is not done with us yet. He also has a very funny, happy guy named Happy Hogan, who is, I guess, his driver, even though he doesn't often drive him places. He has Obadiah Stane, his father's bestest friend ever. No hints there about what's to come. And of course, his AI butler, Jarvis, named after his father's actual butler, Jarvis, because Tony has some abandonment issues and daddy issues and
issues
and just issues in general. Tony is the owner of Stark Industries, a weapons manufacturing company. But that's not cool anymore because we're not going to make any more weapons. As Tony's, the Stark Industries elaborate stocks plummet 50 points. Tony makes a new tinker that is not attached to a car battery. Good for him. I can keep going unless you want to jump in at some point with your sassy remarks.
No. You keep going. When you get to the end of the movie, I'll do the Power Dorks version of the abridged version of the film.
So done.
Get my thoughts.
And so Tony decides that he wants to build another mecha suit, and he does, while being a social recluse, which is completely different from his other times being a social recluse. Like that time when he skipped out on his own wedding ceremony, wedding award ceremony.
Let me see here. I'm going to be awarded an award, so let me go skip my own wedding ceremony at this time,
please. No, he's actually gambling with hot chicks, because that's one does. And then he gives the award away to a guy dressed as Caesar, because that's how we are. But Christine Everhart is apparently the only woman that can get Tony Stark to give a crap about anybody but himself. I don't understand this woman, but okay. So Tony decides to be a hero and stop terrorists. All while his bestest buddy ever, Obadiah Stane, is scheming behind his back and selling rockets to terrorists because money trumps patriotism always.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And that's, of course, not counting the two Humvees full of very lovely enlisted armed forces people who were killed while Tony was sitting in the Funvee. His words. So to make a long story short, Obadiah gets his hands on the original mech suit, modifies mech suit, steals Tony's first his second tinker, thus having him revert to the other ticker that's still engraved that says Tony's proof that Tony Stark has a heart on it. And they fight in an epic battle as Pepper Potts does something that's not being a damsel in distress. And it's rather impressive. And of course, we cannot count and forget the strategic homeland enforcement. Wait, investigative. What was it? This, just call it SHIELD, okay? And thus, the MCU begins as Tony Stark announces at a press conference that he is indeed Iron Man, and that is not a guy that works for Tony in the suit. That's Tony in the suit. Oh, yeah, and then Nick Fury shows up and tells him about the Avengers Initiative, because that worked out as planned. Go for it.
My turn?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Hold on. Water. This is going to be a long run. I got 4 pages of stuff.
You can't condense a little bit?
Well, it also depends on how fast I say it.
All right.
All right. Shall we? So, Iron Man. We got some fun V's here, and yes, Tony, you are being court-martialed for being awesome. Woohoo, peace. And here comes the boom. Oh no. Because Tony, you're now going to be running for cover, but oh crap, now you're being stuck with some 10 rings crap. Which nobody actually noticed at all in this movie. You notice that?
Yeah, no, nobody talked about the Mandarin in the first movie, even though, like, now you watch it and it's literally
you see the 10 rings. You see the 10 rings.
Every time it shows up in any scene in that bunker.
But oh no, 36 hours earlier, we have more fun stuff. Like Tony snuffing his own award ceremony, not wedding. Because nah, gambling and hitting on chicks is more important. But wait, Tony had bodyguards? Who remembers this? But look at that house. That view, that is gorgeous. And Miss Potts taking out that trash. But of course, Tony arrives late and they're off to do Tony's presentation. But would anyone like some sake? And of course, he had a successful presentation, which brings us back to the now. Tony's up and he's hooked up to a car battery. Tony meets his captors while still trying to understand everything because he is slightly confused. Tony then sees his weapons in the wrong hands. Tony then creates his plan in his head, but first he needs a new chess piece. Aw, look at the little arc reactor. Isn't it adorable? But yeah, look at that little arc reactor. It's just so adorable and bright. Like, you shouldn't really look into that thing. That will blind your ass. So,
I was just gonna mess with the hippies.
Yeah, but now it is time to build the Jericho missile. But uh-oh, the head baddie is suspicious of what's really going on. Jensen's in trouble. So Tony, you got to do something. Good, good. You did something. Kind of half-assed, but you did something. And yeah, the first
bunker. Prisoner by terrorists.
Shush, you. And then yeah, the first mask is unveiled. And it's suit up time, but they need more time. And well, they be dead prematurely. Jensen to give Tony more time, but doesn't kill anyone. Like, seriously, you're shooting in the air when you have five guys running away from you. You can easily hit all five of those guys in front of you. Just
priority.
Yeah. Priority. I want to shoot the ceiling of the cavern. Welcome to Iron Man's world, bitches. Duke kills himself by trying to shoot Tony in the head. Jensen, goodbye, my friend. Tony is mad now. Y'all are screwed. And Tony flies away to safety, kind of. Rhodey and Tony are reunited. Thus now, hey, Pot, sorry for the scare, but irony, but Tony needs a cheeseburger and do a presser. Hey, it's Phil. Tony shutting down the weapon manufacturing sector of his company. Obadiah isn't happy, but the wheels are spinning in his head. Back at home, hey, Pepper, can you help me replace my chess piece, please? Jarvis, time to work on our secret project now. Batty's digging up the old suit in the desert. Tony making his suit better, and ouch, that original flight demo. That ceiling did not have any give in it. Obadiah in town with pizza, and the board is filing an injunction against Tony. Flying test number two going better, could be worse, but better. And how we have our first full suit demo run, and I have to say, freezing is a bitch. A present from Pepper, and time to do adjustments to the suit. Give it a nice paint job, Jarvis. Tony's got a party to crash. Tony meets Phil and then has a moment with Potts. But then bad news. Thanks, Christine. And Obadiah, you jerk. But thanks for the motivation. Because here comes Iron Man. And he's wrecking you, son. And don't worry, it was all a training exercise per Rhodey. Last page, I promise. You're just like, shut up, Mike. Pepper knows. And nice bullet holes, by the way. Meanwhile, Obadiah visits the 10 rings and destroys them without laying a finger. And now on to Sector 16. Tony has a mission for Pepper. Pepper doesn't want to, but Tony convinces her otherwise. Pepper's on to you, Obadiah. She knows the truth. But Obadiah knows she knows. But Phil! Tony built it in a cave, damn it. If he can do that, you can too. Except Obadiah takes Tony's chess piece to power his suit, so Tony scrambles to get to his lab to get Pepper's gift. Good job, robot. You finally did something good for Tony. Here comes Ironmonger. Yes, that is the actual name of the character for Obadiah Stane when he's in the suit. But Iron Man to the rescue. Lengthy battle ensues. Shield press conference. I am Iron Man, bitch.
That was the longest recap of my life. No, just kidding.
You got to admit, for four pages, I went for that pretty quick.
That was great. So I think we should start talking kind of like from behind the scenes to the characters and their portrayals to the overall story. So starting with the background, and you and I were talking about this before we started recording, that this movie was in production for years.
Since 2000.
But part of this is because they kept changing directors. They didn't have a script. People kept passing on the script. So many people passed on the script because, and this may be shocking to you know, Gen Z people and most comic book fans who came into this like post Iron Man. Iron Man was not a popular character. He wasn't like not popular, but he wasn't like Spider-Man, Captain America level popular. He was like second tier. To the point where, like, he had his own animated series, but then so did Blade, so that's not really saying much.
But Blade's awesome.
Yeah, Blade's okay.
But you can on my Blade.
Happily. Blade is such a boys fan character. I don't know what it is. But anyway, so they kept changing writers. They kept changing directors. There were, like, five actors that were supposed to be in this. They offered it to Hugh Jackman at one point.
The development's actually longer than I thought it was, or that I remember it. In April of 1990, Universal Studios bought the rights to develop Iron Man for the big screen.
So, hold on, though. But they never went through it. This was part of Stan Lee's grand scheme of selling movie rights to any schmuck who promised him a movie. So, let's stick with the 2000s. So, Marvel rebrands itself as Marvel Studios, and this is a big risk. If this movie sucks, Marvel is screwed beyond belief, considering they just survived bankruptcy in the 90s. So there's a lot going on. So let's see. Hugh Jackman was offered the role. Tom Cruise was going to direct and star in it at one point. Nicolas Cage wanted to, but then he was in Ghost Rider, and let's be real, nobody wants that again.
Nicolas Cage, though, was approached in 97. Tom Cruise was approached in 1998. And he only wanted to produce and star, not direct and star.
Whatever.
Yeah. Quentin Tarantino, however, was approached to write and direct the film.
So was Joss Whedon at one point, I believe.
But that was also in 1998. Pretty much by the time July 2000 came along, the film was being written by New Line Cinema, or for New Line Cinema, by Ted Elliott, Terry Rossio, and Tim McCanleys. Used the idea of a Nick Fury cameo to set up his own film. McCanleys did, actually. So
we haven't gotten to the... But anyway, so I think John Favreau comes on board finally, and they still don't have a script, and he really wants Robert Downey Jr. Now, bear in mind, Robert Downey Jr. was still dealing with the ramifications of going to jail and, like, his history of drugs and drinking and everything. So he was still a risky, risky actor to cast. And so now you mention Iron Man, everybody's like, oh my God, Robert Downey Jr. But he was a risk. And any fanboy to this day that keeps complaining about Marvel's casting needs to go back to 2007 when they, or 2006, when they announced that Robert Downey Jr. would be playing this iconic character.
I mean, I think it can be said for any superhero movie because the biggest backlashes that I remember personally, Heath Ledger for the Joker.
Yep. Chris Evans for Captain America.
Yep. Chris Hemsworth and Tim Hiddleston for Thor.
Really? I don't remember that at all.
Because at the time, they were both unknowns. Nobody knew who they were.
That's like right.
Because Chris Evans, the thing for him was that he had done Fantastic Four.
And we were all still traumatized for it.
And for Heath Ledger, he had been doing, you know, in a way, the chick flicks, even though he didn't want to be portrayed as that. So
fanboys, fangirls, rule of thumb, chill pill. Wait and see the movie. So then you have Gwyneth Paltrow being cast, and Samuel Jackson was obviously cast in that cameo and in general to portray Nick Fury based off... the Brian Michael Bendis version of the character from Ultimate Spider-Man, which was designed off Samuel Jackson. So let's get to the cast that we have. We have Robert Downey Jr., who, like we said, was kind of an experiment, but we can't imagine anybody else in this role. You have Jon Favreau with his glorified cameo as Happy Hogan, a role he reprised in Spider-Man Homecoming.
And Iron Man 2 and Avengers Endgame. And Iron Man 3.
Yes, yes, and Infinity War.
No, he wasn't in Infinity War.
Wasn't he?
Nope, he was not in Infinity War.
He was in a deleted scene.
Yeah, but he wasn't. Anyway, yeah, he wasn't.
Anyway. You have Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper Potts. And to be honest, I kind of miss the slightly uptight version of Pepper Potts. I think they would have been funny to play around with her a little bit more. Just because, like, we see, like, that was the dynamic I remember from, like, the 90s Invincible Iron Man cartoon, where Pepper Potts was this, like, you know, like, very much his personal assistant, but she was so much more than that, and the movie really portrayed that well. You have, what's his name, who played Obadiah Stane? His name is on the tip of my tongue.
Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges, the Big Lebowski, played the role of Obadiah Stane, which is really interesting, and he really read the comics. What was great was, like, Gwyneth Paltrow requested that she be given comics to read, and same thing with Jeff Bridges for Obadiah Stane. He asked for comics and source material. Nowadays, anytime anybody's cast, they get given a stack of comics, like, this is your research material, read it. Sometimes I wish the people writing these things would also read them, but that's a separate conversation for another day. And then we do have Terrence Howard as Rhodey, and I don't, maybe it's because Don Cheadle plays the role better in Iron Man 2 or what, but Terrence Howard just doesn't feel like he fits in. He feels very stiff, and maybe that's because I don't know if he's ever played a military character or what, but it was just a little, maybe just because it's been a while since I've rewatched this movie, but he just feels very out of place.
I'm searching Terrence Howard right now.
Go for it. I'm going to keep talking because that is what I'm good at. And of course we have Clark Gregg with his first appearance as everybody's favorite or least favorite character, minor character, Phil Coulson. Phil is head of the not yet acronym Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division. I knew I would get there. And of course he taps Pepper to, like, hey, we need to debrief him. And Pepper's like, this is the longest name title of a government agency I've ever heard of in my entire life. And so the characters play off each other really well. RDJ and Gwyneth Paltrow do have a really good chemistry. Paltrow and Clark Gregg had known each other before this film. I think he mentioned somewhere that he's known her since she was like 19. So there's an obvious, like, really great familiarity there that I think helped sold it. Jeff Bridges and RDJ just have, like, this natural, like, attitude towards each other, to the point where when Obadiah Stane actually confronts Tony and says, I'm the one who, you know, told the board to lock you out, you actually feel betrayed a little bit.
So Terrence Howard has actually done quite a few military roles before and after Iron Man.
Really?
Yes. He's been in, Hearts War.
But did he play military people?
Yes. Hold on, okay. Let me get back to it. He played.
If you are watching this, my apologies, but you were still stiff in this role.
Yeah, he did. In Hearts War, he played Lieutenant Lincoln A. Scott, opposite of, I believe, Bruce Willis.
Oh, wait, wasn't he also in, what's it called, that movie about the Tuskegee Airmen?
I believe so. Hold on, I'm looking.
Iron Sky? No, what's it called?
He was on The Ledge, although I think that was more police.
At this point, not important.
Yeah.
But Tony Stark as a character is, at the beginning, like, you feel sympathy for him because, you know, he just kind of got blown up. But in the flashback, he's not a very likable character. He's kind of sleazy. He's a playboy. He doesn't really seem to care about other people. So he's not very likable. And I think that's actually really interesting because previously in movies, we've had, like, the X-Men who are natural outcasts, whatever. We've had, like, Superman who, like, everybody loves Superman. Even the Batman, there's not, like, Batman is a very likable character because we really like Bruce Wayne. So there's a lot going on. And to have a character that just comes off so sleazy, but we're also supposed to believe he's a superhero at the time, was actually very refreshing.
Yeah. Let's see.
So we're introducing, let's see what we got. I have, like, my little page of notes. I liked the thing is like some of the parts of this movie aged surprisingly well, especially Christine Everhart's whole shtick about like journalism. And you know, to be honest, I think she should work for CNN. But I think what's really interesting is there's a lot of ad-libbing in this movie. And maybe that's why some of the characters like Pepper Potts, like Rhodey, come off very stiff, because there was no full script. But people like RDJ, he's naturally very like comedic. So he just kind of played it off. And like, let's be real, he is the personification of Tony Stark in real life. So,
well, let's also be honest that with Robert Downey Jr. doing films like Chaplin have also helped him.
Chaplin is also an excellent movie that I did enjoy. So you have this aspect of like, this movie kind of deals with the aspect of like war and war profiteering and weapons manufacturing. And this is leftovers from Howard Stark. And we see a little bit more of this in like Captain America, the First Avenger, and in Iron Man 2. And anytime Howard shows up literally anywhere. And you really do see that he has some serious daddy issues. So this film to me, and I was trying to watch it while ignoring the rest of the MCU, but something struck out at me. First time I watched it, I thought it was kind of implied that Obadiah Stane killed Howard and Maria. We'll find out later in Winter Soldier that they were killed by Bucky as the Winter Soldier by Hydra. So that makes me wonder, was Obadiah Stane working for Hydra the entire time?
Man, why couldn't we time heist to that?
Anything is possible.
So I'm actually reading a few notes right here. As you had mentioned, there was a lot of improvisation. That was because the filmmakers had focused on the story making sense and planning the action of the film. Downey was actually the one who came up with the idea to have the Stark news conference on the floor in the beginning of the film.
Yep.
Downey also created the speech when he demonstrated the Jericho weapon on the fly. Jeff Bridges described this approach as a $200 million student film and noted that it caused stress for Marvel executives when the stars were trying to come up with dialogue on the day of filming. Also noted that Bridges and Downey would swap characters for rehearsal to see how their lines sounded. The dialogue for Nick Fury's cameo scene was also changed on set, with comic writer Brian Michael Bendis providing 3 pages of dialogue for the part and the filmmakers choosing the best lines for filming on set. And apparently the Nick Fury cameo was filmed with a skeleton crew in order to keep it a secret, but rumors apparently appeared on the internet like only days later.
That part I remember. I definitely remember that. So there's an interesting comment that was made. It was something about, I can't remember who makes it. Was it whether it was Jensen or Obadiah Stane? But there was some comment about going to space, which I thought was in retrospect very ironic. So kudos to the Russo brothers for doing their research, if that is the case, or maybe this is just a happy coincidence. But this is Marvel; there are no coincidences. So, I really love the scene in Galmira with the women and children. First of all, because I think it's also very timely, especially with like Syrian refugee crisis and everything. But it's just terrifying where you have like these gunmen holding these women and children hostage and he just like takes them out without barely lifting a finger. And it just looks so epic. And speaking of epic, the soundtrack to this movie is phenomenal. It's just, it's so amazing. It's so good. And it's just like, it gets you pumped. And in terms of comic book to movie adaptations, I think this is the only one that actually feels like a comic adaptation as opposed to an alternate universe version of a character.
Well, and this is one of the interesting things is that for Jon Favreau, when he got on, signed on board to do the film, he brought on comic book staff writers Mark Miller, Brian Michael Bendis, who I had mentioned earlier, Joe Quesada, Tom Brevoort, and Axel Alonso, and Ralph Macchio.
Ralph Macchio is a writer. Interesting.
Yeah. We're also called upon by Favreau to give advice on the script.
So
he actually brought in comic book people to help the script.
So what I'm hearing is basically we need more comic book writers to make movies.
Well, no, not necessarily write the movies, but at least consult on scripts.
I think that would be awesome, but the MCU has taken on a life of its own, so I highly doubt that will happen again. I really hope it does, especially when it comes to making a certain movie based off my certain favorite comic of mine called Young Avengers. So. Hey, he already wrote one superhero movie. He can write another one. Get Heinberg. But so this, I think it really helped the movie to have those guys on set to consult, because it feels like a comic book adaptation. It feels like you're watching an extension of the comic. And yeah, it's different from the original, but it does genuinely feel like a comic, like you're watching a comic book. And this is me taking jabs at a 2003 Hulk movie that I will never review because it's just that awful.
Well, it's not part of the MCU, so we're not going to worry about it anyways.
When we're done with the MCU, in between, it does not matter. I don't want to see this movie. I watched it once. That was enough.
I don't think I've ever seen it fully.
Don't bother. Just watch one of the review shows that reviewed it and just leave it there.
Yeah.
So Tony really, and I actually just read the tie-in comics that takes place between Iron Man 1 and Iron Man 2. And you do really see, I think, in those comics, kind of Tony's progression that we don't really have time to focus on in the movie. So Tony does go from that bitchy billionaire playboy macho man of mystery who is a super genius, he's just lazy and doesn't care and does his own thing, to actually caring about other people and being a hero. And also, it is incredibly hilarious rewatching this, knowing how much shorter RDJ is than Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah. So interesting note that I've pulled up, that apparently as you mentioned, the original plan was to have the Mandarin as the bad guy.
Yep.
But the decision to push him into the background is one that is comparable to Sauron in Lord of the Rings or Palpatine in Star Wars, where, mm-hmm. like, as I mentioned in my abridge, you had the Ten Rings in the background. So you saw that they were there, but he wasn't there. So the presence of him is technically there without being there. And the switch from Mandarin to Obadiah Stane was actually done after Bridges was cast in the role of Obadiah Stane.
Yeah, because I think you said in the...
Because Stane originally intended to become the villain in the sequel. Crimson Dynamo was also a villain in early drafts of the script. Yeah. But however, Favreau felt it was important to include intentional inside references for fans of the comics, such as giving the two fighter jets that attacked Iron Man the call signs Whiplash 1 and Whiplash
2. Whiplash 2, which would reference. Be the bad guy for the
Whiplash,
next.
And including Captain America's shield in Stark's workshop.
That's in Iron Man 2.
Yeah, well,
briefly shows up here, but it really makes a splash in Iron Man 2. But
but it's in the workshop during the first Iron Man. You just don't. It's a blink and you miss it. It's Iron Man 2 where Coulson pulls it out. We'll get to it in two episodes, and it's like, oh, that's it. I need that, and takes it. You know, so
there's just. So this movie does kind of hint at their relationship. I liked at the very beginning of the film when we start the flashback to the 36 hours leading up to him getting blown up. There's that little montage about Tony's life and like the life of his father and the car crash and like it's hinted at like very early on that like Obadiah is kind of like in the shadow but like not the shadow. And it does kind of lay in the ground the progression of the character throughout the rest of the MCU, but you also kind of start to like, the going back and watching these movies is great because you notice things that you now have context for, like, oh, look, here's the daddy issues. Here's this, here's that. And I think Tony, throughout his life, kind of learns that like his dad did love him, but his dad is also kind of not the best human being anyway. And this is something that we learn throughout the progression of the series. The only thing that I still don't understand, though, is how, like, Agent Carter level Howard Stark, like, Captain America the First Avenger Howard Stark, ends up with Iron Man Tony Howard Stark. Like, what else happens in this in-between period? And I'm not even talking about, like, Agent Carter stuff, because we're not getting into that. But overall, it's a, I would say it's a pretty decent adaptation. It's definitely, because let's kind of look back at this point. What if, in terms of superhero movies, we had a crappy Hulk movie. We had two or three at that point. I think it's all three X-Men movies, which are kind of okay-ish. You had the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films, and you had Blade. And
you had two of the Blades at that time, at least.
There you
no,
go.
All, no, all three Blades, correction.
No, all three. I think the last, everything came out like 2006, 2007 at the latest. So it would have had to be.
The last Blade was like 2004.
Okay, well, there you go. And then I think Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 3 that nobody wants to talk about was like 2006.
Yeah, because I was working for GameStop at the time when that came out.
And then
that was bad.
The X-Men 3 was like 2006, 2007.
So, yeah, somewhere around there.
So that just tells you kind of the status of superhero movies at that point. But I would say that Iron Man, the first Iron Man, kind of falls similarly to the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man film. In the sense that, like, and, like, I have a soft spot for the original Spider-Man movie just because of its comic book adaptationness. And I think that it works well as an adaptation. And so what I'm saying is, like, in terms of origin stories and adapting a comic book to modern audiences who may not be familiar with the character, especially in the case of Iron Man, they did an incredible job considering how much was stacked against them. The fact that this movie was as successful as it was is incredible. And
so
everyone worked on it.
To put that out there for you, I got some statistics.
Of course you did.
So this movie was released on May 2nd, 2008. Had a runtime of 2,006 minutes and 1 second. Yes, I had to count the 1 second. Which, when we get too much deeper into this, we'll actually explain something when we get to Endgame. Because it actually makes sense. In its opening weekend, Iron Man grossed $98.6 million in 4,105 theaters across the United States and Canada, ranking first at the box office, giving it the 11th biggest opening weekend at the time. Iron Man earned $318.4 million in the United States and Canada and $266.8 million in other territories for a worldwide gross of $585.2 million.
Which is not too bad. It's not bad.
And it also had the third highest grossing opening weekend of 2008 behind Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which was a tanker, and The Dark Knight, which was possibly the best film of the entire freaking year or summer. It grossed $35.2 million on its first day alone, and Iron Man had the second best premiere for a non-sequel behind Spider-Man and the fourth biggest opening for a superhero film,
which is not bad in all things considered. And there is one thing that I kind of want to mention, which I guess I have to for talking about the MCU. It's the Stan Lee cameo.
Actually, didn't you notice that I left that out of, like, I left it out on purpose.
I think it's worth mentioning, even if I'm very far from Stan Lee's biggest fan, which is weirdly enough how you and I met, of me complaining about the Stan Lee worship. But Stan Lee has a funny little cameo here as Hugh Hefner. And it's in the casino as he's leaving. You just kind of like, hey, Hef, nice to see you.
Yep.
It's not the most elaborate cameo, and it's not the most creative cameo, which is, I think, why they got rid of it as quickly as they could in Iron Man 2 and got it out of the way, even though I think RDJ and Stan Lee became like super close and everything.
Yeah, they did. If you watch the Endgame like bonus features, it actually shows a lot of interaction between RDJ and Stan Lee. But yet again, like, Stan Lee became really close with all the actors, like Chris Evans, Chris Hemsworth, like all of them became really close with him. So
I mean, it's kind of hard not to when he's on set and he has an executive producer credit, but I guess everybody and their mother gets an executive producer credit, whether or not they actually do anything.
You do know what executive producers means, right?
I don't actually.
It means that they're putting up the money, or they're allowing the rights to be used for the sake of the film.
Okay, but Stanley hasn't had anything to do with Marvel in decades at that point. Why does he get an executive producer credit?
Because I got to look it up. I don't have the full thing.
It has to be like some kind of like courtesy credit at this point, because
let's put it like this. If they put out Black Widow and they put Stan Lee as executive producer for that, that's a courtesy credit.
Look, I'm sorry. It's still a courtesy credit. Like, unless he was on set telling them how to do this.
No, that's actually the actual producers. Executive producers are more the people putting money into the films.
So like Kevin Feige.
Yeah. So if you actually if you actually look at Kickstarter campaigns or Indiegogo campaigns, and you look at the ones specifically for films, sometimes the biggest Kickstarter gift that they can give, like say, I decide to make one of my films again, and I say, if you donate $5,000, you'll have an executive producer credit. That's what it kind of is.
Huh.
It's like the executive, they're kind of the ones giving the money, or they're the executives from another company that's overseeing the production. You know, it's more stuff like that rather than like a courtesy credit.
Still have no idea why that involves Stan Lee, but okay.
But he might be like, even though he's probably not on set all the time, he may have been on set a lot more back then.
Probably.
Than he was near the end when he was filming like 5 cameos at a time because his age was just getting to him. So, I mean, you don't know that for a fact, because like, I know for a fact, like when they did all 3 Spider-Man movies, he was probably on set like all the time because it was Spider-Man.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will forever be bitter. But anyway, so as far as like movies, looking at it as like the spark that fanned the flame of the MCU, and as an independent film of a superhero genre, it was entertaining. It didn't make me annoyed. It was fun. I didn't see or note any like super big frustrating problems, other than, you know, a couple of actors being a little stiff, which like, from what I remember reading about the behind the scenes of the movie, Gwyneth Paltrow didn't have a lot of experience with ad-libbing and improvisation. And it's possible that Terrence Howard doesn't either. If that's not true, Terrence, I apologize. I don't think you'll ever listen to this podcast, but just in case, I'm sorry. Much respect, but this is not
these losers, you know? But one thing also to bring up is like, this was this and Incredible Hulk were 2 make or break films for Marvel Studios.
Especially Hulk, because last one sucked.
Well, it wasn't just that. It was that when they did the Blade movies, that was really Marvel Studios' first foray, but they partnered with somebody to do it. And Iron Man and Incredible Hulk, which we'll be doing on the next episode, those were really the first two films with Marvel Studios as the standalone. It wasn't them working with somebody else like they did with Blade.
And this is the first...
But Blade opened the door for them to do Iron Man and Incredible Hulk, and with the success of Iron Man and so it's also why they had a 2-year wait in between films, because Incredible Hulk came out in July of 2008. The next movie didn't come out until 2010.
Yep.
And as we know, there's always like 2 to 3 films a year now for the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It's incredible. Like I remember hearing, like, let's go back to our ye olden MCU days. There will be historians writing about these moments 20 years from down the road, I guarantee it. But I remember thinking of like, oh, Thor's coming out and oh, it looks cool. And I remember just like being giddy at the thought of Captain America being adapted, mostly because, you know, Captain America. And I remember watching Iron Man for the first time And like, I remembered Iron Man from like the Invincible, like the 90s days. I still remember his cameo, his like the
the cartoon series.
Yeah, and the crossover he had with Spider-Man the Animated Series, which also had a crossover with X-Men the Animated Series. So there was an MCU before there was an MCU.
I would call that the Animated Universe rather than an MCU.
Okay, fine. The MAU. But point being, like, I had vague knowledge of Iron Man, and to see this on screen was pretty unprecedented. Kind of how it was seeing Spider-Man for the first time. And, you know, maybe once we finish the MCU, we can go back and cry at the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films, but...
True story. So I went to go see Spider-Man 3 in theaters.
We all did.
I hated it so much back then. And I'm pretty sure if you look hard enough at the movie theater, like where you buy the tickets, there's a little sign that says, if you're not satisfied with the film, you will get a free movie ticket to a movie of your choice. I obviously hated the film, didn't like it. And I complained and I said I was not satisfied with the film. And I used that ticket to go see Hot Fuzz like a week later. Also that summer was the Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer movie.
Oh my God.
That was a bad summer.
Speaking of bad summer.
I saw that, complained, said I was not satisfied with this film. And I used that ticket to go see 28 Days Later, which was the movie with Cillian Murphy, directed by Brian Boyle. Or Dan Boyle, or
Dan
Boyle. Yeah, it's essentially like a zombie movie.
Gotcha.
But not focused on the zombies, but more on the people who survive it and stuff like that. Really good film. The sequel sucked, though. But Jeremy Renner was in the sequel.
Look at that! Everything comes full circle. What was I gonna say? We were talking Spider-Man. Then you went to
said Fantastic Four.
Yes. Okay.
Rise of the Silver Surfer.
So I was looking through my, like, Facebook feeds of, like, on this day, this is what you did.
Oh, the memories?
Right. Nothing to do with the Silver Surfer. But apparently about this time last year, give or take a day, I went to see another Fantastic Four movie of slightly more recent nature.
Oh, that one?
Oh, that one.
I haven't seen that one.
Don't bother. This is, again, one of those movies where you kind of just watch the review of it or the honest trailer and just kind of think yourself that you didn't spend money to see it. I did. I was like, granted, like, I didn't expect a big audience. My brother and my best friend and I went to see it on a weekday. And we're sitting there watching it and we're just like, what? None of this makes sense. Everything is kind of frustrating. And why are they teenagers? Which is like, you know, note to Marvel, if you are making another Fantastic Four movie, which I believe you are, please, 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 for the love of all that is Kirby, please don't screw it up.
So,
bonus points if you include Franklin and Valeria Richards.
So I'm going to say do this. We're going to do a little bit of news and notes real quick because it's relevant and it should be talked about. So today in MCU news... It has come out that Sony Pictures and Marvel Studios have come at an impasse. I
should help my heart out.
Have come at an impasse. And Spider-Man is leaving the MCU, but Sony has two films with Tom Holland planned as Spider-Man. If anyone has ever read the hardtimes.net, which is a parody site, I'm just going to read this because we need a laugh in this horridness that we are dealing with. And it's properly titled, Marvel Allowed Weekend and Holiday Visitation with Tom Holland.
This is that awkward moment when mommy and daddy fight.
So in a controversial move, Sony Pictures and Marvel Studios announced today the termination of their contract, allowing the Spider-Man character to remain within the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The terms of their deal do, however, permit Marvel weekend and certain holiday visitation with Spider-Man star Tom Holland, sources confirm. We've raised the boy, so we deserve to be a part of his life, Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige said, according to those familiar with the situation. This change is going to be hard enough for Tom, and he shouldn't have all communication with us cut off. I'm happy we're able to arrange weekends and holidays and hope that things can remain civil moving forward for his sake.
And just
hold on, I'm not done yet. There's more. I was hoping we could weekends, holidays, and television, but maybe after working on a relationship for a few years, we can work that out too. Executives from both Sony and Marvel were seen leaving the Stanley Moss Courthouse in Los Angeles around 1:30 p.m. today, with members of Marvel's team in tears as they watched Sony Chairman Tim Rothman drag Holland by the arm, 23-year-old actor holding on tightly to his teddy bear, asking, "Why, Kevy? Why so sad?" We are doing what's best for Tom, Clayton Rothman, buckling Holland into the backseat of his 2017 Toyota Sienna. He may not realize it now, but one day he's going to thank us, he added before lighting up a cigarette and speeding out of the lot. Judge Benjamin Rose provided his comments on the proceedings. "You never want to see such a tight-knit corporate relationship fall apart," he noted. "You always hope they'll work it out and that receiving millions of dollars in merchandise benefits would be enough for one mega corporation to sustain, but I guess human nature takes over. I pray for all parties involved." At press time, Sony CEO Anthony Vinciquerra was seen preparing Holland a box of Kraft macaroni and cheese, but not quite how the actor likes it, causing him to throw a fit, which resulted in the grown man crying on the kitchen floor, saying he felt far from home. Okay, now I'm done.
All right, so along those same lines, but not nearly as entertaining, fans have threatened, because as fans do, to boycott Sony, PS4, and PS4, or soon to be PS5, I guess, over Spider-Man leaving the MCU. The hashtag boycott Sony is already a thing.
Oh, man. So my friend and hockey teammate, Christopher Shaggy Vasilis, just did a tweet and a post. And I'm retweeting it real quick. Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Everything's going dark. I don't feel so good, Mr. Stark. Oh, no. There went Spider-Man.
Hashtag that was not new. But look, I what Sony's problem is, considering they haven't not made many good movies recently. And, like, their partnership with Marvel, first of all, gave them a freaking Oscar. An Oscar for Spider-Man to the Spider-Verse. Like, are you telling me that, like, that's not worth anything? I mean, to be honest, I don't know who's... I don't understand why Sony's pitching a fit like a baby. Maybe they're just...
Here's the thing. We don't know who's pitching what.
That's true.
We really don't. And I think the backlash people are doing against Sony for the Spider-Man PlayStation 4 game, PlayStation 5 is probably not for another year or two. I think it's a little unjustified, my humble opinion. But because we don't know all the details, we really don't.
Fair. So
it just broke today. You know, the fact that I read a Hard Times article is just us having a little bit of fun with it. But as of right now, we're not going to know the truth. We may not know the truth maybe for a few months or...
Maybe we can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
Actually, no, that's probably accurate. Fanboys can't. The fandom can't.
No. So, but yeah. Like, for all we know, it could have been something where Disney was like, "Sony, we will pay you X amount of money to just buy the Spider-Man franchise from them and bring it into Disney full term instead of having to do this partnership." Which, hey, I mean, if they're offering a lot of money, it could be worthwhile. But at the same time, Sony may have gone, "Well, if you're going to do that, we still want to cut the profits of future films that he's in, blah, blah, blah," and stuff like that. So you don't know.
Well, we'll find out. And by the time they get a new Spider-Man movie on the books, who knows what will happen?
I mean, who knows? Maybe by the time we get around to another Spider-Man, they've repaired things.
Let us hope. Let us pray.
So,
but anything is possible. We don't have to dwell too much about it. But I think
that if you are still with us, the MCU will prevail and stay alive. And now we can stop people from making memes about having a Young Avengers movie with Spider-Man in it. Yay, at least there's a happy line. And so with that, I'd like to tell you to please make sure that you find me on Nerdy Notion.
I gotta pitch you into the social medias. You just don't go into social media.
Fine.
What's wrong with you, girl?
I like being in charge.
You are in charge, but still, I gotta keep you in line.
Good luck with that. Not gonna happen.
Oy vey. Anyways, Sasha.
Yes.
Where can the people find you on the social medias?
So obviously Geeky Captain on Instagram and geekgirl101.tumblr.com for all of my snarky and bitter rantings about shenanigans and comic books.
And of course you can follow me on Twitter at @thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions. And you can find Nerdy Notions on txhthockey.com/nerdy-notions. And as we alluded to earlier at the beginning of the episode, Sasha is doing an episode of Power Dorks. You can find that episode at txhthockey.com/power-dorks. So, Sasha, take us out.
And tune in next time as we tackle the incredible, the Edward Norton-ness-ness-ness-ness-ness, that is, The Incredible Hulk.